Okay, to get started here, here's the plan for this conference call, what we're going to do. I have my dad, Edwin, here with me, and what we're going to do to start out with is I'm going to just kind of go over a little overview. You know, I've been putting up a lot of content on the classroom area, a lot of videos that hopefully everyone has been watching, and going through the worksheets and stuff like that. So I'm going to go over a little overview of what's been put up so far, kind of coming up to where we are now, and then we are going to open up the call to talk together. And the plan is we are going to unmute everybody and let you all share a little bit about yourself, a little about where you're from and your garden, and where you are in your gardening experience, and then we can talk about questions and about specific aspects of how hopefully we can help out with your garden and specific needs that you are having in your garden. So to start out with here, let's talk about a little overview of where we've come from so far in this course. Starting out with the course, we started out with the very basics of, you know, where are you going to choose to plant your garden in the first place, choosing the land. And from that, we moved on into planning your garden. And just a little review with planning your garden. Remember, planning your garden is really important. It's really crucial to having a successful garden, at least I believe so. This is my opinion, that having that plan set up where you know what you're going to plant and even scheduling it out onto a calendar can just be so helpful when it comes down to actually implementing it in your garden throughout the year. And that way you're not coming up to a week and trying to figure out what you're going to be doing every day. You actually have a plan set out ahead of you. So remember the session on planning your garden. And that kind of led into, well, first of all, growing in beds versus growing in rows, and then bed preparation in general. And we have been promoting using growing in beds for the most part, which the difference is, if you'll remember, the difference between growing in a row, you know, you can grow like a row of straight corn, and corn generally is grown in a row. I mean, we still grow corn in a row. But when it comes to other vegetables like kale and collards and lettuces, people can still grow those in rows, whereas if you grow them in a bed where you have a whole bunch of them and it's easier to see visually, but where you have them spaced out evenly where they can grow up together and shade out the weeds underneath them, you can actually make much more efficient use of the space. And we've been encouraging everyone to grow in 30-inch wide beds, and there's a few reasons for it. It's a nice width that you can reach across, and you can straddle it pretty easily for planting in, and also there's several really nice tools that are designed for using with 30-inch wide beds. But when it comes down to it, you really can choose whatever size bed that works for you. And if you're doing like square foot gardening or something like that, of course you can do the little square for the square foot gardening and stuff like that. But whatever you do, make sure that you stay consistent and come up with a plan that you can stick with in your garden. So we talked about bed preparation, and then that went into direct seeding and transplanting. And remember that there's a lot of plants. In fact, probably I would say, I don't know, what would you say, Dad? 80 to 90% of the plants that we plant, we transplant. And there's several reasons why we prefer transplanting over direct seeding. Although there are those crops where it's just simply more economical and more efficient to direct seed, like corn, for instance, where you're planting a whole lot of it, and other ones like your beets and carrots and radishes, where they have those small seeds that you're planting a lot and then you're going to let them sprout up and thin them out. Those ones are good for direct seeding. But when it comes to transplanting, you can you can actually transplant a lot of vegetables, and there's some really key benefits to transplanting, which, first of all, being you have those transplants in a nice environment where you can kind of control the environment to a certain extent and give them that head start on life. And then once they have grown for those first few weeks, then you can transplant them out into your garden, and they've got a head start because you've been giving them the optimum environment to grow in the first place, and then once you've transplanted them out, they also have a head start on the weeds. So we went into transplanting and soil blocking, which is our preferred way of growing transplants in soil blocks versus in plug trays. And some of the advantages of the soil blocks is that you don't have root circling with the roots. When the roots come to the edge of a plug tray, they'll often just continue circling around the plug tray, and a soil block can prevent that because when the roots hit the air, they stop growing. It's called air pruning, and they stop growing, and that enables it so that when you transplant the transplant out into the ground, it can just quickly incorporate into the soil because the root has stopped growing there, and then once it's put into the ground, it can just continue growing out to the soil. Of course, if you leave your transplants too long in the soil block, then your roots will start growing out of the soil block. So we encourage soil blocking, and we kind of went over that and a demonstration on that, and then transplanting successfully, and how you'll want to make sure that when you are transplanting your transplants out, and a really important key aspect to transplanting them out is hardening them off and making sure that they are acclimatized to the outdoors before just dumping them out into a new environment where they're now exposed to the sun and the wind and all of the elements. So you want to make sure to give them that extra time to be able to be hardened off, where they get a little bit of experience outdoors and then come back inside and then back out again until they're ready to go out into the elements, as it were. And the final one that I just posted up this last week was on cultivating and weeding and making sure that you can get those weeds when they're just barely starting to come up, and how it can increase your efficiency in the garden a whole lot by just getting out there. And the key thing to keep in mind here is that you're doing this at a time where you're not necessarily thinking that it needs to be done. In other words, you look out your garden and it looks like a beautiful garden, but right at that time when it's still looking beautiful is the time that we need to get out there and just stir up the top layer of the soil, and you can knock out, 80-90% of your weeds when they're just barely sprouted, if not even sprouted. Dad, tell them the story about that bed that you did where you couldn't even see the weeds.
Yeah, trying to remember, I think it was a sweet potato field a year or two ago. I decided to get out there and start cultivating before the weeds started coming up. The ground had been sitting for over a week, fallow, and the sweet potatoes had been transplanted in, and it had been rained on. I knew that weeds would be coming up, but it looked bare. And I just went ahead and started cultivating. I wasn't able to get the whole thing done that particular day, and I think it was a week later before I got back there again, and there was a clear line. You could see where I had cultivated, there was hardly anything sprouting, and where I hadn't cultivated had a nice growth of small weeds coming up.
So remember to get out there quickly, get out there early before you even see the weeds coming up. So that is, I guess, a real quick summary of what we've gone over in the course so far. And what I really want to do with these coaching calls, I mean, these coaching calls are for you. They're for your benefit. And so want to give the most amount of time to be able to talk together about questions that you might have, things that you might want to look at, specifically relating to your garden, but really any questions in general. So what I'm going to do now is open it up, and I'll go ahead and unmute you, and then would love to hear just who you are and a little bit about your garden, your gardening experience, where you're coming from, how long you've been gardening, where you're at in this process. And so when you hear your phone say that you're unmuted, then it's your turn to go ahead and share who you are. So, hello. Let us know just a little bit who you are and what your experience is in gardening.
Okay, my name is Curtis Haraway, and we've gotten just a little bit over the years, just small gardens in the different places that we've lived. We live in Monticello, Georgia, which is about an hour outside of Atlanta, and we have a 20 by 30 foot garden, but inside the garden are beds of different crops, such as corn and eggplant and bell peppers and sweet potatoes, and tomatoes. And we also we're using a lot of wood chips, and so some of my questions have to do with that.
Great. That sounds wonderful. Sounds like you have a really neat garden going on there. And tell you what, it ends up looking like it's you and us today. So let's go ahead and jump right into your questions. Would love to hear. I'm really intrigued with wood chips, and I actually have planned to do more experimenting with them myself. And so I really want to hear your experience, and we have a little bit of experience here. What are some of your questions, and what is your experience with?
Maybe first off, I could just ask when did you put the wood chips on? How long have you had the garden with the wood chips?
Well, actually, we just moved into the place that we are now just this past February, but we had the opportunity to put the wood chips on the garden, I believe, in October, early October. And so from October until February, the garden was able just to sit.
Okay, good.
Well, actually longer than that, because we were moving in the month of February, so we really didn't do anything until the springtime, I think May or April or May, somewhere in there. And so the garden had a long time to sit. And prior to us moving to this property, they did have a garden in raised beds. And so what my family and I did, we broke down the beds and the dirt, so we didn't have to do a whole lot of treating. They had already treated the garden. And so we just broke down the beds, made it one big bed, and just covered the whole thing with about 4 inches thick of wood chips.
Very nice. So you just put wood chips straight on the ground. You didn't put any compost or anything underneath as a layer first before putting the wood chips on.
We did put some manure that had been broken down. And basically, let me also tell you that they were not fresh wood chips. We actually have a place where we can go and get wood chips from kind of the county landfill. And so a lot of them are already breaking down. And so when the previous owners where we live came home after we had done that, they actually thought it was dirt, but it was actually wood chips.
Okay, yeah. We have a product that we are able to get from a similar facility. They call it triple ground. It's pretty fine and black. Is that something similar?
It's not totally. Some of it's black. Some of it you can still see the wood chips in it as well, because we also have been using the wood chips all over the property for different things, because you can get it in different stages.
Yeah. Well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. And so, like, one of my questions, you know, with the sweet potatoes, because they have actually taken over a corner, one quarter of the garden, and I know that as they lay down roots or rhizoids, I'm not for sure what they are, they put more sweet potatoes in the ground, and I was wondering if the wood chips might block them from doing that.
That's a possibility, but I guess it's something I would not personally be too concerned about, because my experience has been that generally the sweet potatoes that might grow on the runners are not very well developed. In other words, those runners, you know, it takes a while before those runners are long enough and they root, and so those potatoes have started growing later than the ones that, you know, on the slip that was originally, yeah, the main stem that was put in the ground.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, you might have some small ones there, but I wouldn't really be too concerned about missing out on something by them not rooting.
Okay. Excellent.
In fact, we pretty much only dig up the main stalk of our sweet potatoes.
Yeah, when we're you know, we're digging a field, we don't have time to go searching around for the other stuff that might have been rooted in the ground somewhere, you know, between the beds.
Okay. Excellent. And another question I had actually had to do with when you were talking about transplanting, and you mentioned, like, short-duration plants, and I was wondering how long should a short-duration plant sit indoors before, I guess, you start taking it through the hardening process?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean by short duration.
In the video, I guess, like, I think you said most plants, you keep them indoors for about 3 or 4 weeks before you start taking them out. And then you said some plants don't need that much time. I believe you used the word short duration.
Yes, I think that what I was talking about was using the different size soil blocks, the smaller soil blocks or the larger soil blocks,
mm-hmm.
and using the smaller soil blocks for some of your short-duration plants, like you were mentioning there, ones that are going to grow pretty quickly, or ones that you want to plant out into your garden pretty quickly. Because basically what it is, you're going to be planting your seeds, and then, you know, your seeds are going to sprout. And while it's true that different plants grow at different rates, so you have ones that grow faster and ones that grow slower, but even putting that aside, if you're growing a plant in a smaller block, it's going to fill up that block faster than if you're growing it in a bigger block. And so you're going to have to plant it out into your garden sooner, and so you would consider it a short duration in the sense that it's going to stay for a short time in your greenhouse. You're going to be moving it out pretty quickly, and so you'd consider a short duration transplant where you're just going to be seeding it. It's going to grow for a couple weeks in the smaller soil block, and then you're going to transplant it out into the field pretty quickly.
Okay.
I know some of the vegetables that we plant in the smaller soil blocks are like our lettuces. What are some of the other ones that we plant in the smaller?
Well, I could just share some ideas on strategies on different size soil blocks. in the spring, when you're trying to get things started indoors, so that you will have, so that after your last frost, you can put them out. And I'm thinking maybe specifically of tomatoes and peppers and things like that, the things that are sensitive to frost.
Mm-hmm.
The larger you can grow them, the more of a head start you're going to have when you get them put out. In other words, you're going to, if you can put out a tomato that's in a 4-inch block, you know, and has a large root system already, and you put that out in your garden, that'll bear you tomatoes a lot faster than one that's in a little, 1.5-inch block.
Okay.
You know, because it's so much bigger and well developed. So that's one strategy in using larger blocks, is that it allows you to have a larger, more well developed plant to put out. But once once we're past that frost date, that issue is not quite so important. It can still be there because the second consideration is that when you're putting transplants out in your garden, you're occupying the particular space that those plants are in for less time than if you direct seeded.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So the bigger the plant that you transplant out, the less time you're occupying that part of your garden with that crop. So you could have more turnover of different crops in your garden by putting out larger transplants. So that might be a strategy to think of. But it's once you're past the first frost, it's not so necessary. You can put smaller transplants out. But, you know, the idea is that just the smaller the transplant is, the more tender it is and the more vulnerable it is to bugs and things like that. The larger it is, the stronger it will be. And so those are some basic considerations. Like Paul said, we often put our lettuce, we usually do our lettuce in the smaller 1.5-inch blocks. And then we will transplant that out, and it's a fairly quick growing plant, and we just plant it out smaller.
Now, do you actually go through the hardening process with the lettuce also? Because I do have some lettuce that we started outside because it didn't do well the first time. We got about 4 good heads that we were able to utilize, and so I have. They've been inside now for about 3 weeks, and you take them through the hardening process as well?
If we're putting them outside, we do. Now we're transplanting into both hoop houses and to the outside. So, yeah, if we're putting them outside, you'll want to harden them off.
Okay. Good. And I need to start that this week then.
Yeah, and one thing with the hardening off process is it doesn't have to be a long process. It doesn't have to be something that you do over, a whole week long. In fact, our standard hardening off process here is, in my work with my dad and my uncle with Bountiful Blessings Farm, the standard process for hardening the plants off is to put them out late afternoon one day, let them go overnight, and bring them back in mid-morning the next day so that they're inside over the heat of the day. And then put them back out again mid-afternoon, that afternoon, and transplant them the next day or even sometimes that same day,
that
don't
same,
we?
That same
we
evening, yeah.
Transplant them the same day. So it can be fairly quick. It doesn't have to take a long time.
Yeah. And yeah. Using that process, our favorite time to transplant is in the evening, because that way we can get the plants in the ground, water them, and they can go through the night and kind of get established without having to go through the heat of the day. So yeah, you just like Paul said, put them out in the late afternoon, keep them out until mid-morning, bring them in, and then you could possibly just transplant them right out the next afternoon.
Of course, it will depend to a certain extent on the weather conditions where you are. If you have a lot of high winds, you know, all the time consistently, then you might need to let them harden off a little bit more, whereas where we are, it's fairly temperate, and probably most areas are pretty temperate, so...
Yeah, we're in a pretty temperate area. The only concern I would have right now is we're having a lot of rain, and I can see that the rain could possibly beat down on them.
Yeah. That one thing that I have done also is if it's overcast and you're wanting to harden off, you can just put them out and leave them out. You don't need to bring them back in midday if it's overcast.
Okay. Well, that's good. Okay. That'll work too, yeah. Good advice. I think that's all the questions I have for now.
Okay.
All right. Well,
I'd like to ask about you know, we haven't done a lot of work with the wood chips yet. Like Paul said, we've got done a little bit, but I was just wondering how, like when you put your tomatoes and other things in, how did you find digging through the wood chips to plant them? Did you try to transplant them into the soil? Or one thing we've thought of doing is not trying to dig up the soil, but just kind of setting them on the surface of the soil and filling the wood chips back around them. I was just curious, how did you do that?
What we did was we moved back the wood chips, and then we dug into the soil and planted them back into the soil and covered them up in the soil, then moved the wood chips back on, and everything did very well. Like I said, I mean, it's the best garden we've had since we started trying to garden this year. Of course, we've had a lot of rain also. Like I said, the only thing that did not do well, because when we planted the lettuce directly outdoors, I think we planted it kind of shallow, and so I don't know if the birds got to it, but four plants did very well. And so that's the only, and so that's why we decided to bring them in to plant new, start new ones inside, and
okay.
They grow rapidly. And so probably I'll take it through the hardening process tomorrow, and then we'll see how those do.
Yeah. So did you transplant the first lettuce, or did you direct seed it?
We direct seeded. I direct seeded the corn, the lettuce, the beans, and everything else was transplanted.
Okay. So when you were direct seeding, you pulled the chips aside also and direct seeded into the soil?
Right. And I actually, when I pulled, like, the things that I seeded, I did not cover it with the wood chips completely. We just kind of covered around them, so I kind of have an idea where the seeds are.
Right. Okay.
And then as it grew, maybe then we, well, not really. I didn't even go back and do anything because it grew up so rapidly. Because we just had a lot of rain. It was, like, amazing.
Wow, that's great. Well, I've got an idea for you, if you're up for an experiment. It was an idea that came to me, and I actually tried it out here in our flower beds on the side of our house here because we just mulched them recently. And it came off of the knowledge that over in Europe, there are places where instead of, you know, they're growing their plants in soil blocks, and instead of actually digging their soil blocks into the soil, they just put their soil blocks on top of the bed on the soil, and then the plants root down from the soil blocks into the soil below. So they're not actually digging them in. And we tried this, and it didn't turn out the greatest for us. The soil blocks tend to dry out pretty easily.
I think they're doing this in hoop houses in the wintertime where there is a higher degree of moisture and it's not as likely to dry out.
But anyways, putting that aside, thinking about the wood chips, the idea came into my mind, what about just pulling the wood chips back to the side and doing the same thing, just putting the plant down to the soil level and letting it have contact with the soil and putting the wood chips back over, and that way you're not digging 4 inches down and then, you know, another 3 inches to get your soil block into the soil. You can just set it on top of the soil. So I tried it out on our flower beds with some flowers that we were transplanting in, and they seemed to do really well, and it was pretty easy to transplant them because now all you're doing is just pulling the wood chips back and putting them onto the soil. But I'm curious if you're interested in doing a little experiment, I would be curious to see if it worked for you too.
Oh yes, what I'll try to do is maybe do half of them, dig them into the soil, and half of them just put on side, because I have it set for two rows of lettuce, and
yes,
we have about 10 plants to work with right now. So, and just see what happens between the two.
That would be nice.
That would be amazing. I would love to. Yeah, definitely let me know how that goes. I'd love to hear.
Okay. We'll do that. We'll do that.
So I'm assuming you got the wood chip idea from the what was that video garden?
Back to Eden.
Back to Eden. Yes. Yes, and actually our intent. Well, actually, you mentioned your flower beds. We've actually filled in. And we're in the process. We have a lot of beds around the house and even fruit trees on the property that we want to put wood chips around as well. But we after we did the garden and let it sit, we also had transplanted some rose bushes and lilac and what were the tulip things? That's there. Right here. Lilies, blueberry bushes. An apple tree, a fig tree, and with all that, we put the wood chips, we put them in the ground and covered them, the ground around them with wood chips, and almost everything has done very well. The blueberries are the only thing that hasn't done too well, yet where we brought them from, we had done the same thing, and they were doing very well. They were sprigged from one of our church members' blueberry bushes, and at the other house they were doing well, but when we transplanted them, they're alive, but they just don't seem to be doing well this season. So. But we did all our rose bushes, the lilies, the lilac. The lilac, we put stones around it too for the castle. Lavender, I'm sorry. They have done very well. And even the hydrangea as well.
Hmm.
So we've done, and the idea was from the Back to Eden. We just wanted to try it. I have another friend who has a much bigger garden than I do, because they're starting a lifestyle center. He has used the wood chips in planting his all his fruit trees using the Ellen White method, and he planted about 50 trees.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Is that somewhere near you there?
Yes, yes. He's also in Monticello.
Okay.
That's great.
Yeah, so we're seeing how that, right now, all this tree, I just over his house a few weeks ago, and all the trees are doing well. His problem is keeping the deer away.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, how big of an area does he have the trees in?
What, about five? I think that part of the property is about five to 10 acres, somewhere in there. It's big. It's huge.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh.
And the area is fenced because it used to be an area, I guess they used to keep goats and horses in, but he took
okay.
the big fields and he just planted a field of fruit trees. And then along the driveway and everything, he planted different nut trees.
Okay. Now we have a kind of fencing that we highly recommend for as being very effective for deer, and it's not very expensive. But I don't know if you know with that large of an area, he might want to put our solution is it's just a temporary fence that we put up around fields that, you know, there are certain crops that deer will go after and others they don't go after, and so we just set it up around the crops that the deer are going to go after.
Mm. And is that about a 6-foot fence you're putting up, or?
Yeah, it's. We use 8-foot T-posts, but, you know, once they're in the ground, it's about 6 feet high. But it's
okay.
just a black plastic mesh. And we just, you know, put a, you know, on the T-posts, there are these yellow insulators that you can just clip on for running electric wire on.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So we just clip one of those onto the top of the T-post and hang this mesh from it, and that way, by not attaching it underneath, we don't need to put in a gate. We can just lift up the mesh and duck under, or easily take the mesh down and then just put it back up again when we want it up again. So
that's neat. So that you can use it over and over again and move it to wherever you need it.
We just set it up when we have that field growing there, and then when that crop is done, we take it down and put it up where we want it on the next crop.
Ooh.
And it's very cheap, and it's a lot less than, you know, putting in a permanent deer fence. It's a lot less than putting in a permanent deer fence.
Now, do you just pick up those materials at a Home Depot or Lowe's or something?
No, you'll have to go online to find that fencing. The T-posts and insulators, you can get at Tractor Supply or Home Depot or wherever. But the fencing itself, there are a number of places that sell it. One place that I've gone to is called Deer Busters.
Okay.
And they have a number of different weights and qualities of this kind of fence. It, you know, you can just, I think we use kind of a medium or cheaper weight one, and it'll last 5 or 6 years. It depends on how rough you are on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Deer Busters, and it's online.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and that fence is very, very, very effective. It kind of discombobulates the deer. Well, especially in the evening or nighttime, it's hard to for them to see it, and so they come up to it with the mesh, and then they don't know how high it is, and so they don't jump over it, and
okay.
And because it's taller than the 6 feet of the T-post, it kind of drapes down onto the ground some and helps keep out other smaller animals that are running along the ground as well. So,
like your rabbit, because we have lots of rabbits running around too.
Yeah, it's about 7 feet. The black mesh is, so it kind of drapes onto the ground about a foot. And
okay.
You can anchor that down if you want to, but we've decided we'd rather leave it loose. The other thing you can do is take the you know, when you need to mow, because you'll start having, you know, grass grow up through that mesh. You just take the bottom of the mesh and pick it up and hook it onto that insulator, and then you can just, you know, mow right or weed eat right along under it, and then drop it back down again, and you got your fence there.
Okay. So the insulator, that's the part that's going across, or that's the clip?
That's the little clip.
The little plastic, yellow plastic clip-on insulator.
Okay.
Yeah, we just use that as something to hang the mesh from. You know, it could be anything else, I guess. Just it's on very loose, but it, as long as it's in place, we've not yet found deer inside the fence. You know, whenever they do get in, we go and check, and there's always something wrong. Either the fence was old and it had a tear, or somebody didn't put it back right, or, you know, somebody picked it up and hooked it up and then didn't drop it down, or there's always a reason why the deer got in. It's not, as long as it's up, we haven't had deer get inside.
Okay. Speaking of deer, I have another question for you, because I don't know if this concept is true or not, but when someone saw my garden, like I told you, it's about 20 by 30, and I have a 4-foot fence up around it, and we have lots of deer that come through the property, but we have not had a deer to come into our garden, and they said, you know, probably because it's too compact. And they don't have a lot of room to run around and do anything because our garden is compact. And so is that true? Because if it is true, because I was thinking next year, because we wanted to extend the garden, instead of opening that garden, it's just build another one the same size right behind it.
Well, that's an idea. I don't know. But, you know, it could be that they don't feel comfortable jumping in there, and they wouldn't have a lot of room to run and, you know, jump out. I don't know.
Okay. Huh. I do have dogs in the back, but they've already felt comfortable where they'll come up to my fruit trees, but they have not come to the garden at all. I haven't seen them come near the garden. You know, I've seen them go through and keep on going, but.
Huh.
So
you're interesting. You know, they won't go after something, but then after a while, I guess one of them will try it and decide, well, that's not so bad after a while, and then you'll have to start protecting it.
Yeah.
I mean, my brother John, right now the way we've organized the farm, he's doing spring and summer crops and I'm doing fall and winter. And this year they ended up putting a deer fence around the melons. And you know, we'd never had problem with the deer grazing on the melon vines before. You know, sometimes they'll come in and try to break open the melons once the melons are getting ripe, but you know, they had just started transplanting the melon plants into the field, and the deer started so they ate them, and so they ended up putting the fence around the melons. That's the first time we've ever done that.
Oh, okay. All right. So this might not be a bad idea if I do notice them, just use that same concept.
Yeah. But, you know, our attitude is we don't want to make more work for ourselves than necessary, so we'll wait to see if the deer are getting in before we put up something.
I understand, especially it saves money, too.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. All right, but, well, you've been very helpful, that is for sure.
Well, I'm so glad you got on the call, Curtis. For a minute there, we were just thinking it might just be the two of us, so it's been really nice to have the time talking with you.
Oh, yes, I've appreciated the one-on-one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, like I said, I will experiment with that and let you know how the wood chips are going. It definitely, I have not seen the cultivation video yet, but it has been nice. I've just been going out with my hoe every other day because I practice 3 days a week, and the other days when I'm home or my family will go out there and we'll just take the hoe and just kind of scrape the weeds out of the ground and ongoing, and it's been very minimal compared to our garden 2 years ago. We had a huge garden at a friend's house, and it was like 50 by 100 feet, and my family had gone away to camp, and I was there to tend to the garden by myself, and when they came back, they you could see it on their faces. They were like sorely disappointed because we had some rain, and it was just covered in weeds.
Yeah.
It was, you know, there were five of us working. It was just me, and I was like, I just couldn't handle it all, even though I was coming out there whenever I can. But overnight, they just grew, and it's like, wow.
Yeah. You know what that's like.
Yeah. So it has definitely helped with the weed control. Not that it's not empty of weeds, but it has definitely helped.
Yeah,
that's exciting. I definitely think that's a huge potential. Because it helps with so much stuff. I mean, mulching helps with the weeds, but it also helps with the water retention and building up the soil.
I think it improves the soil.
Yeah, because really, besides when we first transplanted for the first couple of weeks, we haven't watered our garden at all. But we've had a lot of rain, too.
Yeah. Well, we noticed a similar thing with our, like I told you, our flower beds out by our house here. We mulched them, and last summer we hardly watered it, maybe once or twice. But it was, they did well. They did superb. Whereas before we had to have soaker hoses on them or some type of watering system, otherwise they just wouldn't make it. So
yeah.
Well, it's been a joy talking with you and hearing about your garden experience. And yeah, do keep us updated. Shoot me an email or something when you find out how your little experiment goes. I'm really curious to hear about how that goes.
Okay, we'll do that. And thank you both for the information and what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you. Enjoyed talking.
All right, likewise.
Have a wonderful evening.
You guys do the same.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.